the Republicans to wake up is... The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to. Do it live!
Now, from the Left Coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Welcome to a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. We do get support from listeners, and my thanks to Scott Bigelow of Aurora, Colorado. He stepped up. You can help, too. If you're in a position to do so, go to my website at peterbcollins.com, and you can subscribe voluntarily for as little as $5 a month. Now, you're not required to listen to our podcast in order, so if you have not yet heard Podcast 40 with Sibel Edmonds, I encourage you to listen to it. She laid out a series of stunning charges based on what she saw when she worked as a translator at the FBI and what she has learned since. Regarding the efforts by the nation of Turkey to cultivate influence in Washington, legally and illegally. And so far, there's a media blackout. Only Bradblog.com and the American Conservative Magazine are covering this story. In today's podcast, we talk with John M. Cole, a former intelligence operations specialist, 18 years at the FBI, mostly in counterintelligence. He's got a book coming out in November called While America Sleeps. And John Cole confirms the credibility of Sibel Edmonds and also confirms that her charges were known at the highest levels of the FBI and known to be true. Listen now as John Cole confirms the allegations raised by Sibel Edmonds here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I've known Sibel now for quite, for a few years, and everything she says, she's 100% right on the money, on the mark. There's not one thing I've seen Sibel be off the mark on. I mean, she's 100%. She's very credible. I give her 100% credit on everything she says, because some of the things I'm not aware of, that she claims. But here again, we know we had the Department of Justice Inspector General reviewed all this stuff, too. And in their report, they came out and said that there was a lot of merit to what she was saying, and they ordered the Bureau to investigate her allegations. And, of course, they have never done it. I mean, it's been how many years since they told them to do that, and nothing's been done. So, I have a lot of respect for Sibel Edmonds, and I trust her. I don't think she'd say anything that wasn't true.
Well, let me ask you about this part, John, because I realize that you and Sibel had access to different compartments.
Right.
And so let me just ask you a couple of questions here related to what has been published by Philip Giraldi in the American Conservative.
Okay.
And tell me as much as you can in terms of confirming in a specific way or in a broader way that it's consistent with your knowledge or consistent with, things that you were aware of that might have been on different tracks.
Okay.
Okay. Sibel Edmonds has alleged that she is aware that Mark Grossman reportedly was recorded making arrangements to pick up a cash bribe from somebody representing the American Turkish Council. Is that consistent with your knowledge of FBI investigations and the background of Grossman going back to his service as the U.S. ambassador to Turkey?
That would make sense to me, and I have no reason to doubt what Sibel's saying. I don't have, I can't come out and say that I know that for a fact, because that was something that I was not privy to at that time. I know we've had investigations against high-level State Department officials. I mean, we had, when I was running the program, we had an investigation on a high-level State Department official at the State Department headquarters. But that is consistent with what we would normally do. If we had an investigation on somebody and we want somebody to wear a wire or tape them or audio tape or videotape, that's a common thing. When I first started working the Turks, that was back in 93 and 95. And that's when I was working the Israeli program. And I know for a fact we had investigations where it showed there was some collaboration between the Israelis and the Turks, okay? I can't go into detail on what those were, but I'll just tell you that.
Sean Cole, based on your experience going back to the early 1990s, can you confirm that there was an ongoing and detailed effort by Turkey to develop influence in the United States through a variety of means, some of which were not legal?
Yes, I can confirm that. That's true. Turkey did it, and there's other countries that did the same thing, to try to influence or policymakers to sway policy for their benefit. That happens a lot.
And are you aware of any long-term collusion by U.S. officials that aided and abetted that desire by Turkey to develop influence in Washington? In other words, was this a two-way street?
As far as helping us, helping the American public, no. As far as helping a certain politician, yes. Politicians, that's correct. They would ask for favors. Turkish individuals would ask for favors. You know, you help me out, and I'll help you out. And basically, what would happen is the official, the elected official, would either receive money or some kind of gift, or if it was a government employee, I've seen it where after they retired, they get these very lucrative positions with a Turkish company or whatever the country may be. It may be not just Turkey. This happens with other countries too. They get a very lucrative position that pays them an extraordinary amount of money. And you said, well, how is this guy making this kind of money? I mean, what's his background or what's his knowledge? And, it's suspicious. So, yeah, they help. If you help them out, I'm sure they'd help you out. Let's put it that way.
And based on your knowledge, was this centered at the American-Turkish Council? Was that the entity, the non-government agency, that was used by Turkey to spawn and promote this desire to develop influence among important officials in the United States?
That was just one. There was others, too, but yes, that was one.
And as you read Philip Giraldi's article and the companion interview in the American Conservative magazine, was there anything that jumped out at you that was new to you?
I thought it was very interesting, the article was, and nothing really surprised me, let's put it that way. You know, I thought, well, there's certain things I wasn't aware of, I'll say that, but nothing surprised me. I thought, well, this makes sense. This makes a little more sense on some of the investigations I had. I can understand now why certain things happened the way they did. But as far as really jumping out at me, nothing was a surprise.
So were you at all aware of the concern over Sybil Edmonds, and if she were permitted to speak before a congressional committee or deposed in a court of law, are you aware of any of the efforts that occurred to issue the unprecedented gag order that John Ashcroft wrote at the behest, we're told, of the State Department and Defense Department?
Well, I'll tell you this. I didn't know Sybil Edmonds prior to the article coming out in the Washington Post. I think it was in June of 2002, where they said two whistleblowers, came out. I read that article and had my name in it and had Sybil Edmonds' name. And when I went back to work the next day after that article came out, I asked somebody, I said, who's this Sybil Edmonds? And they said, a woman that I know, a female that I know, that worked up on the seventh floor, which is where the director's floor is at. All the executives are up there. She told me, she goes, well, all I know is that everything that Sybil is stating, this is what she told me. She goes, everything that Sybil is stating is true. She goes, I read her file. Everything she stated is, in fact, accurate. And she goes, the seventh floor better figure out what they're going to do about her, because she's completely right. And I said, well, and then I asked her, I said, well, how can I get a hold of her? I want to meet with her. I want to talk to her and compare notes with her. And she told me, she goes, it's best you don't get in touch with her. So I didn't get an address. I couldn't figure out where Sybil was. And I tried for years to get in touch with her. And I finally got in touch with her when I found her email. I was going through, I think it was a Google search, and one of the articles had her email on it, email address on it. And I emailed her, and I said, are you the Sybil Edmonds that was named in the paper in the Washington Post? And I'm John Cole. I've been trying to get in touch with you. Here's my contact information. Well, Sybil called me right away. And she said, I've been trying to get in touch with you, too, since this article came out. And she goes, I've called every John Cole in Washington, D.C., Virginia, and Maryland. And I said, well, I had an unlisted number. So she was glad to get in touch with me. And I think I went out to D.C. the next day or within that week to meet with her and talk to her. But, yeah, everybody at the headquarters level in the Bureau knew that what she was saying was extremely accurate.
And aside from the woman on the seventh floor that you referred to, mm-hmm. was there any kind of a buzz that we've got to silence this woman, that this is dangerous for the FBI, dangerous for the U.S. government, could expose ongoing investigations? I mean, some of it could have been put in legitimate terms, and others, like you just cited the woman on the seventh floor, seem to be suggesting that a cover-up was in order because this information was not only true but highly explosive.
Well, exactly. And there was an executive assistant director I used to talk to all the time, and I talked to her about it. And she said one time, she goes, well, if the Bureau's going to have to try to work something out with Sybil, because they don't want this to go out and become public. And I said, well, I think it's kind of late for that, but I know they didn't want her to go out and speak about it at all. And I know they were trying to figure out ways of, keeping this whole thing quiet, because they didn't want Sybil to come out. The thing is, the position that Sybil was in, she had access to extremely sensitive information. The translators have access to some of the most sensitive information that we receive. I mean, we have stuff that is just mind-boggling, the stuff that comes in and the translators translate and we get. And they have first-hand knowledge of it before anybody else does, because they're the first ones to translate it, and they say, well, wow, look what's going on here. And then they send it to the investigator, and we put the pieces together and say, okay, now this is pertinent to my case here, or this is pertinent to this, or we send an IIR out to the community saying, this is something you might want to be aware of. This has implications that may affect even the White House or policy. And so you send a intelligence information report out to, those agencies. So what Sybil is saying, I don't doubt whatsoever. I don't think there's no reason for her to lie about it. And she's been accurate on every other point that she's ever made. So what I'm saying is that I know she had access to some very sensitive stuff, and I can see why the Bureau would squirm over her coming out and speaking about some of the things that were going on.
John, help me understand the way the Justice Department, which is the parent of the FBI, interacts with the Bureau. And do you have any knowledge, or would you care to speculate, on whether the FBI went to the Attorney General and said, we've got a problem, or the Attorney General responding to what we believe were issues raised by the State Department and the Defense Department, went to Director Mueller or someone under him and said, we've got a problem and the solution is the state secret privilege?
Well, I can tell you right now, if we went back in history and saw the relationship between the FBI and Department of Justice, it wasn't a very close relationship before. I mean, the Department of Justice is supposed to have oversight over the FBI, and the FBI doesn't like that. They don't want anybody coming in and trying to figure out what they're doing. And that's a known fact. I mean, they just don't want anybody from the outside. And they classify Department of Justice as outsiders. That relationship changed quite a bit when Mueller became director of the FBI and Ashcroft became the Attorney General. That relationship became very strong. In fact, after 9/11, Ashcroft would make a point of coming over. Well, I should take that back. Even before 9/11, he came over and introduced himself to everybody. I'm trying to think of when it was before 9/11, but I know after 9/11, he was at the Bureau every morning. And he would meet with the director, and they would go over to the White House and brief the president on, you know, or pimp bomb investigation at the time. And their relationship was very close. I would not put it past Director Mueller going over there and saying, we got a problem, we need to do something, and if this gets out, especially with all the bad press that the FBI had been receiving in the past, it would have destroyed the FBI. It would have destroyed their idea of trying to get the Patriot Act passed and everything else they were trying to get rushed through the Congress. If they knew that there were still problems in the FBI, it would not have been good for a lot of reasons to get a lot of their policies passed that they had passed. So, yes, there was a very strong relationship between Director Mueller and Ashcroft, and I think they worked hand-in-hand to get whatever they wanted to get through and help each other out.
John, in our discussion with Sibel, you kind of compared notes on the manner in which each of you raised significant issues to your superiors, mm-hmm. expecting that they would respect you and follow up with an investigation, correct the problems, and pursue investigations of any wrongdoing. How broad of a problem is there at the FBI in terms of professionals who observe wrongdoing, take it to their superiors, and get the kind of treatment that you and Sibel did?
Well, the thing is that Sibel and I think we felt the same way. When we went into the FBI, I went in the FBI in 1985, and when I went in the FBI, I was very proud to be part of the organization. I thought, you know, here I am. I got accepted to the premier law enforcement agency of the world, and, you know, the agency is there to protect individuals' rights and to make sure that there's no injustice. So I felt that, hey, if there's a problem with inside that organization and I bring it up, they're going to take care of it right away, because that's just the way the organization is supposed to be. That's my, you know, belief, and I think that Sibel thought the same way. The problem is that when I started bringing these problems up to management, and I took them up the chain of command like I was supposed to, it met with resistance on every level. The first level I went to, what happened is I was getting exceptional ratings in my entire career, then all of a sudden they wanted to downgrade my performance plan. And when I contested that and said, hey, how can you do that when I was actually doing more than I did last year, the previous year, and I got exceptional ratings? It doesn't make any sense, and this is what my accomplishments were. It went to the Administrative Service Division. They were supposed to stop it so that until they reviewed it. They didn't do that. They went ahead and put it in the system, which prevented me from applying for any jobs, getting promoted, transferring out, doing anything I wanted to do. I couldn't do it because I had this bad mark in the system. I sent a letter to the Hill and told the Senate, say, hey, there's a problem here, guys. The Senate wrote a letter in, and it took them 2 years before they finally took it out of the system. Of course, by that time, I had reported additional things to the management, and including the director. I hand-carried three letters up to the director, Director Mueller, to no avail. I mean, I never got a response. The only response I got is then they sent the security programs people down and said they had a problem with my security clearance. And I said, well, how can you have a problem with my security clearance when just 6 months ago, I got a letter from Security Programs saying that my five-year reinvestigation was completed and I'm good for another 5 years. And they had no answer for that. So they were just completely, every time they turned around, they tried to harass you on something. I was ordered to take a polygraph exam. I said, for what? We have, you know, never mind, go over and take this polygraph exam. I went over to take the polygraph exam, and they were asking me questions like, do you think your colleagues believe you're a disgruntled employee? What the hell does that have to do with anything? You know, it's just a form of harassment. And they do that to try to get you to quit or until they could try to find some dirt on you. If they can't find dirt on you to have you fired, then they try to get you to quit. And that's what they do. They just come after you. And I had my supervisor tell me one morning I came in, John, you need to stop doing what you're doing because you have a family to take care of. And I said, is that a threat? You know, I'm just telling you, he said, you know, you better, you know, watch your step. And I said, what I'm doing is right and what we're supposed to be doing. The same thing happened with Sybelle. She tried to report those things, and they came after her for reporting it. That sends a terrible message out to all the employees in the FBI because everybody sees what happens. Everybody in the FBI that knew me, that I worked with, all my colleagues and coworkers, they knew what kind of person I am. And then they said, well, you know, look what happened to John. You know, he did exactly what he was supposed to do, and they went after him. Do you think anybody in the FBI is going to go ahead and report anything now of any problems in the Bureau? Hell no. They're going to keep their mouth shut because they know if they open their mouth and say anything, management's going to come after them. And the management of the FBI, they use every tool they have at their disposal. They use the inspection division. They'll come down and they'll say, we have a problem with your records. And you say, well, fine, tell me what it is and I'll correct it. And they can't tell you. It's just a mark on your file, just a way of harassing you. They'll use security programs to tell you that we have a problem with your background investigation. We have a problem with your security clearances now. That's a form of harassment, even if there's nothing there. Then they'll use OPR, the Office of Professional Responsibility, to come after you and saying, we have an OPR investigation against you. And if you have an OPR investigation, that's the internal investigation of the FBI. You can't be promoted. You're stuck. Can't be promoted, can't transfer, can't do anything until that is resolved. So they use every tool they can to come after you and make your life miserable when you're doing what you're supposed to do. And that's just wrong. They've done that not only to Sybelle. It's almost as if they have a standard operating procedure in place. Everyone I've spoken with, Mike Derman, an agent at Washington Field Office that left, who worked terrorism, everyone I spoke with, Sybelle Edmonds, Agent Wright out in Chicago, everyone said the same thing. The FBI management did the exact same thing to them. They first came down and said, we have a problem, you know, with your files, or we have a problem with this. Then they brought the security programs people in. We have a problem with your background investigation. You may lose your security clearance. Then they came down with OPR. We have an OPR investigation against you. It's the same standard operating procedures that every time somebody wants to say, hey, this guy's doing wrong, and there should be something done about it.
So, John, is there a law or a regulation, or should there be, to prevent FBI management in this particular situation from using your security clearance as a way of, as a matter of discipline or a tool to try to keep people in line? Because without that clearance, you can't do your job.
Exactly.
You're neutered. And everybody knows that. And so the various phases that you just described were basically rounds of warnings or sanctions against you. And the very clear threat was that you were going to lose your clearance and, in effect, be unable to perform your work.
Exactly. It's either do it their way or you're out. And that's just the way it is. You're either, you know, going to work with us and, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, if we're doing wrong, that's fine. You don't say anything, we know what we're doing, and we don't want to talk about it. If you do say anything outside the FBI, that's automatic. You know, you're a troublemaker, and we're going to come after you. And they do. As far as the law, they're not supposed to be using that as a tool. I'm not sure if there's a law that says that, but I know for a fact, you know, you're not supposed to be using that as a tool to, you know, over someone's head. But they do. I mean, they do it to everyone.
And you never signed away your constitutional rights in order to become an FBI agent, did you?
No. In fact, when you join the FBI, you take an oath to uphold the law and the Constitution of the United States. Not only that, every year you have to sign a paper. It comes over from the Department of Justice's Attorney General, and it says that you're obligated to report any mismanagement, any security violations, or any wrongdoing of any employee of the FBI or Justice Department. And you have to read that and sign it saying that you understand that. So every employee that sees that is supposed to report it. But the only problem is, if you report it, then you might as well, you better hope to have another job, because you're going to be out of the organization. They'll make your life miserable until you either quit or they can find some dirt on you to try to fire you.
John, is there anything you'd like to add here in regard to the Sybelle Edmonds case and what you would like to see in terms of exposure of her allegations and investigation of these very serious claims?
Well, I'd like to see. I feel terrible for Sybelle because I know what she's gone through. I mean, I've gone through the same thing. I think she went through more than I did as far as that, and I went through a lot. But what I would like to see is there has to be accountability and there has to be oversight. First of all, you need to have legislation that protects people that come out and do the right thing. That's the first thing you need to do, and it has to be enforceable. That's the second thing. It has to be enforceable. You can have legislation, but if there's nothing to enforce it, then it's useless. It has to be enforceable. The third thing is that I don't believe any agency should have their own control over their security programs, you know, for security clearances. And it's just crazy that they have an inspection division in the FBI that goes out and inspects the FBI, because everyone in an inspection division is trying to get promoted. And they know if they go out and they find something negative about an SAC or an ASAC or a high-level official in the FBI, they're not going to report it because it's going to ruin their career. So you need to have a separate entity coming in and looking at that. Well, the Department of Justice would be good if they would do their job. But there needs to be some changes, and some major changes. And I would love to see, especially with the allegations that Sybelle has come out with, her allegations, which I believe are in fact true. I have no reason to doubt what she's saying. I would love to see somebody take that, a special counsel or whatever, some group of people that you can trust, have them investigate those allegations, and then have people's feet held to the fire, have them be held accountable for their actions, and prosecuted if they've done wrong. You know, no one's above the law, and no one should be above the law. And it really irritates me that people are getting away with murder, I mean, in some cases. They should not be allowed to get away with that. There needs to be accountability, and that's what I'd love to see. And I'd love to see Sybelle finally have her day in court, where she can come out and say what she wants to say, and she'd be compensated for all the wrongdoing that they did to her. I mean, she's an exceptional person, and she's a patriot. And she should not have been treated the way she's been treated. That's what I'd like to see.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Your feedback is welcome. Email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. Happy trails.
Happy trails to you. Until we meet again, happy trails.